Don't panic. For the next hour, let Steve and Paul talk you down from that ledge right here on RFI. They're the hosts who won't cop out when there's panic all about.
Dun, 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 dun. Come on, come on, come on, come on. Now touch me there.
You're not drunk. This is actually happening.
Welcome to the Don't Panic Radio Show. My name is Steve Vinson. Sitting right over there is Paul Schultz.
Hey, everybody.
And nothing you're about to hear is true. Hey, what you drinking?
Just the house beer tonight. Just
house
my,
beer?
Just my Miller Genuine Draft. Yeah.
Remember when that first came out? I do.
Really? Remember,
yeah.
It came out in our lifetime?
Yes.
Wow, it's that old.
Well, first there was Miller High Life, right?
Yeah, I used to live the High Life.
Y'all must be crazy. $10 for a hamburger? Y'all must be crazy. God rest his soul.
Right.
What's his name?
When I used to work at that restaurant, my boss would frequently send me over to the gas station to buy like cases of like pop. And he'd give me I had a two-wheel dolly cart because it was right across the street. And I still have my Miller High Life hat that a friend of mine gave me. And there had been so many times I just wanted to walk out and go, y'all ain't living the high life. And just load it up on the cart and walk out the door. See how far I got. And then you know, take a hot dog out of the rotisserie thing, you know, or a burrito.
Just eat it.
But yeah, no, I don't remember this. I just always remember it being around, I guess. And I never used to actually drink it.
Well, then there was Miller Lite.
Yeah.
It came out during our lifetime.
Yeah, Miller.
And then I think it was when I was in college, Miller Genuine Draft. It was like the good stuff. It was either
Michelob
or MGD if you had a little extra money laying around.
I remember that because my brother-in-law, Swan's husband, he started drinking it, and I'd never heard of it. So, yeah, that makes sense.
There you go. Speaking of drinking...
Mm-hmm.
You know, just diving right in this week. You know, we do talk a lot about drinking on this show. So maybe we promote drinking to some extent. Would you say that is true?
I don't deny it.
I
certainly don't discourage it.
We don't discourage drinking. We're not saying that if you're an alcoholic and it'll ruin your life that you should go ahead and drink. But how do you know if you're an alcoholic? I mean, that's the age-old question. And as we discussed last week and the week before, I believe, mm-hmm. I believe we talked 2 weeks in a row about that test that you can take, right?
Right.
Well, Paul and I have decided, as a public service for our listeners, to help you decide whether you have a drinking problem. We, the Don't Panic Radio Show, are going to figure out if we have a drinking problem.
What was it? The Tom Waits joke? I don't have a drinking problem unless I can't find a drink.
Yeah, then that's a problem.
Then there's a problem.
So, we went online, and we found the, what's this acronym stand for? NCADD. National Coalition Against Drinking.
Well, you stutter and stammer when you're drunk, so there's two D's in there. So
yeah,
drinking.
Well, as a responsible journalist and talk show host, NCADD. I'm gonna look up what that is.
Okay.
And anybody can go to NCADD.org and check it out. It's the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence. Their tagline, addiction is a disease, treatment is available, recovery brings joy. I'm doing show research, if you don't mind.
No, that's all. Take your time. We have an hour. Take your time.
Oh, yeah. They're all about the 12-step groups. All right. So, National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence. And... They have a little quiz that you can take to find out if you might have a problem. So let's, as a show, you know, let's take this little quiz.
All right.
What are the signs of alcoholism? All right. Do you drink heavily when you are disappointed, under pressure, or have had a quarrel with someone? I would say that's a yes.
So do you, in other words, do you drink heavily when you get out of bed in the morning and get on with your day? Because all three of those things happen almost daily.
Oh, okay. So we have one yes. We have a yes in there. This is one of those tests that I hate because they don't tell you what is a good score. Like,
right.
I did well in high school and I got grades, right? I was like, okay, I didn't get them all right, but at least I got a good grade, right?
Right.
Can you handle more alcohol now than when you first started to drink?
Well, I started drinking.
I'm
pretty sure I could drink any 16-year-old under the table, so I'm going to say yeah, because that's about when I started, was about 16, and yeah.
Can drink any 16-year-old under the table. That's not one of the choices.
Oh, it's not?
But, okay.
How about all right. Is there all of the above?
Have you ever been unable to remember part of the previous... Okay, I love the... Have you ever been unable to remember part of the previous evening, even though your friends say you didn't pass out?
Only when... Is this only when I've been drinking?
Well, yeah, I think.
Oh, okay. So
there were... I just remember the time when I was in college and I, you know, after a fun night, and I remember having fun that night, and I remember going to bed, and I came downstairs, and I was so proud, and I was like, wow, I was like, man, that was fun, and I said, I know that I got pretty drunk, but pretty proud of myself for not doing anything stupid and not, you know. Basically not making an ass of myself. And it got quiet. They're like, what's the last thing you remember? I was like, I remember going to bed, going upstairs and going to bed. And my friend Greg is like, which time? I was like, oh. Then he's like, go look in the mirror. So I was like, what? He's like, just go look in the mirror. And I got up and went and looked in the mirror and written so that I could read it in the mirror. On my forehead was the word drunk. And it didn't occur to me that I could read it. I was like, what? Why did you write drunk on my forehead? He's like, well, I wrote it backwards so that you could read it because you kept getting up. And I felt like if you got up again and looked in the mirror, you would see you're drunk and know that you needed to go back to bed.
He was so helpful.
That was very helpful. Okay, well, so then I guess I have to say yes on that one. Okay, I like this one. Do you sometimes feel uncomfortable if alcohol is not available? Does being in a state of panic count as uncomfortable?
Does being at a dry reception and watching the clock, does that count?
That's like a thing.
Yeah, I mean, I've only been to one, and as much as I was happy for the couple, I was ready to get the hell out of there. I should have known when I got the invitation, and it said like that the reception was immediately following at the church. I'm like, oh,
at the church.
Oh, I actually thought about bringing a flask with me.
Exactly. If they warn you, I think it's fair and perfectly acceptable to bring a flask. Are you sometimes in a hurry to get your first drink of the day than you used to be? Well, it depends on the day.
And the drink.
And the drink. Do you sometimes feel a little guilty about your drinking? Well, I think we've established you don't have the feeling guilty gene.
No, that skipped my DNA. I don't have a guilt problem.
And that's kind of weird because... For some reason, I imagine, like, the whole thing about sitting inside on a nice day,
mm-hmm.
to this day, if it's nice out, and I'm not out there doing something, I feel guilty.
Maybe we have different definitions of the word guilt.
I started writing down some definitions of the word guilt, actually.
Okay, then.
That's weird, isn't it? Okay, so here are some thoughts on guilt. Fear of inadequacy. So guilt and fear, I wonder if those go hand in hand.
I have no fear of inadequacy. I know I'm inadequate.
Is it fear if you... Well, yes. Fear of an imagined consequence. Like, and by imagined, I don't know if imagined's exactly the right word, but there's this sort of anxiety about something bad's going to happen. Here's one. Fear of letting someone down. Fear of being judged. Are those guilt? I mean,
no, those are just fears. Guilt would be guilt. Guilt is you doing something wrong, knowing it, and processing it emotionally.
Knowing it.
Yeah. Now, like, if I were to, like, you know, commit a crime, I know I'm guilty of said crime.
I don't mean guilty in the sense of, jurisprudence. Jurisprudence, remember her?
She was, we school her.
Oh, man. You see her in the cafeteria, she'd have a tray, like, heaping full of, of, like, everything.
Yes.
Like, she was big, fat, black girl, jurisprudence.
And she was not prudent at all about
her. Well, but she was a very wise, powerful, strong woman of color, and had a fantastic sense of humor.
Yes.
She and I had sort of a buddy relationship, you know? We'd laugh.
You could have done her.
What makes you think I didn't?
Well, you never told me.
Oh, okay.
You would have told me.
All right, so if we don't have a shared definition, tell me what that is then. Like, so, I think I've mentioned this before. When I drink heavily, and then I get up the next day, and I'm... Well, it's like I told you, I was relieved that I was sick a couple weekends ago, as opposed to being that hungover,
right?
Because that meant that, hey, it's not something I did, right? So that guilty feeling, well, I call it guilt. I don't know if it is guilt, but it's the, I don't know, it is like that I've let somebody down, maybe, or I have some anxiety about some bad thing that's going to happen. And guilt is one of those emotions that just gnaws at me sometimes. Is that guilt or is that some other thing?
Well, I would say that's guilt. I don't have that, though.
Yeah. I do think, you know, guilt was my parents' go-to parenting tool when I was a kid. It was just like the whole, like, you know, I'd leave my coat out in the rain or something and just be like, Stevie Allen, your daddy worked so hard for that money to get that coat, and you done left it out in the rain. Never mind that we could just dry it out and it would be fine.
I know, right?
Dude. My dad's not going to have to work overtime to get me a new coat. But it's like, that's how they figured, like, I'm going to teach him not to leave his coat out in the rain by making him feel guilty.
Someone left the coat out in the rain. Dude, your impression of your mom is so fucking spot on, but mine is so bad that people think my mom is from Minnesota. oh dear.
Would you like another slice of vegetable pizza? Now she's Swedish.
Yeah, now suddenly she's Swedish.
You know, neither one of us can do an impression of your mom because she's just that. She's one in a million, man.
Yeah. Well, I run into people that, I love your mom. Like, yeah, just don't piss her off.
Yeah.
That's all. That's because, no, in you were talking about guilt. In my case, you know, my parents' go-to was just the belt, you know.
Violence. If my parents' go-to was guilt, your parents' go-to was violence.
Pretty much.
Like, I'd take guilt over violence any day.
Maybe that's why I don't have that guilt thing, because I, you know, I was never exposed to it. I don't know.
So that's actually kind of an insight here we've stumbled upon. If two people with relatively similar upbringings. I mean, we both had salt of the earth, you know, poverty.
Extremely
your parents aren't
rural.
From the South, but they, you know, they've got
they
as
might
much,
as well have been.
Let's just say they have, and I mean this in the nicest possible way. I'm not racist, but no. With all due respect, your parents have, you know, the same like sort of redneck blood.
Oh, yeah.
In their bloodstream,
it's,
like
the, it's mine, the farm. Right? It's the farm gene. I think farmers and farm hillbillies gene, yeah. pretty much are of the same ilk.
It's sort of like that thing where they take twins that get separated at birth, and then mm-hmm. they find out they have a lot of the same traits, like the same fears and stuff, and they go, "Oh, that's nature."
Right.
But then they take two kids close in age who are adopted by mm-hmm. the same parents, and they end up with the same, you know, neurosis or whatever. It's sort of like that. You and I were raised by similarly situated parents, right?
Yeah.
You ended up without the guilt gene. I have the guilt gene. No pun intended, given your mom's name.
That's correct.
And the guilt gene.
For the audience.
That was her
home.
Nickname around Springfield Township. I don't know if you knew that. Guilt gene. So I guess my point is, I'm reading this question. It's like, do you sometimes feel guilty about your drinking? And I'm like, well, it doesn't matter. Like, me feeling guilty about my drinking doesn't really have a bearing on whether I have a problem. I feel guilty about a lot of things. I might be Jewish, which would be weird given my mom is black, and I don't know if there are black Jews out there, but I have the guilt of a Jew, right?
Whoopi Goldberg,
she's
a black Jew.
Okay. Black Jew. Black Jew. So I guess my point being, I don't feel guilty about drinking sometimes because of drinking.
I feel guilty
about drinking sometimes because any time that I do something that maybe isn't the best, most upstanding thing to do, it's like anything that would disappoint my mom basically makes me feel guilty, right?
She's done her job.
except saying the fuck word.
That's right.
I mean the F word.
The fuck word.
And by the fuck word, I mean the F word.
That's right.
All right. So moving on. Has a family member or close friend expressed concern or complained about your drinking?
I sometimes wonder. Not for me, but we have a mutual friend who's expressed concern about you.
Oh, yeah, about me and my wife.
Yes, that you clearly ruined. It's never happened to me, because I don't have, you know, I
nobody's ever approached you and said, hey, do you think you might have a problem? Or
not that I can recall, but then clearly I have a memory problem.
Yeah. Okay, for you little leaguers out there, if you are concerned about one of your friends drinking too much, don't approach them while they're drunk.
Forget it, Donnie, you're out of your element.
Do you usually have a reason for the occasions when you drink heavily? I want to hear your answer before I
do. What was it? What was the question?
Do you usually have a reason for the occasions when you drink heavily?
Yeah. Not like a holiday or anything, but like definitely like a, you know.
Fuck it, I'm getting drunk.
Yeah, that's typically the exact words that go through my head at that point in time.
So I was trying to, if you're trying to game this test, that's a tough one right there. Because I stopped and I was like, wait, what's the right answer on this one? If I have a problem, would the answer be yes? Meaning, well, on most of them, the answer is yes if you have a problem, right?
Right.
You know, like, are you blacking out now more than you used to? I mean, clearly the answer yes would indicate a problem in these people's minds.
Yeah.
So in this one, if you answer yes, it's like, you know, you thought about it ahead of time, right?
Right.
My cousin's getting married. My wife pissed me off. My whatever. And maybe it's the word occasion that's throwing me off, because I was thinking, like, oh, it's my bachelor party. Yeah, right, that's a reason. Right.
It's
but if you say
New
no,
Year's Eve, you know?
You're like, it's Tuesday. If you're like, no, I don't have a reason, then that means you just kind of get wasted whenever. You know, you don't have a reason. And in the minds of an organization like this, to me, that would be a problem. So that one threw me off a little bit. When you're sober, do you sometimes regret things you did or said while drinking? That one definitely falls right in the category of who hasn't.
Yeah.
Have you tried switching brands or drinks or following different plans to control your drinking? Again, who hasn't?
Dude,
I don't know anybody who hasn't.
That's the thing about these two. The whole point of this test is to make you feel bad about yourself, because they're loaded. They're fucking loaded questions. You know.
Well, I agree with you, and I will even take it one step further, which is make you feel bad about yourself and therefore call them.
Right. Exactly.
Them.
Exactly.
Call them.
Them.
Right?
The whatever the acronym is.
The NAADD. It's the National Association for the Advancement of Drunk People. NAADP.
That's the organization we need to start.
NAADP. National Association for the Advancement of Don't Panic.
That's right. We have a new association.
Let's start our own association.
That's right.
Don't Panic Against DP against something. You know, that, in fact, that, thank you for reminding me, because that is exactly what appealed to me about this exercise, is to point out the absurdity of these questions, because basically, so let's say we were somehow able to reach a wide audience and we wanted to grow our audience even further, and we were somehow able to, I don't know, get religion on our side and get government on our side and get, and just be like, okay, so now we have to come up with a list of questions that will make people realize that what they're missing in their life is listening to our show.
Right.
Like, do you be like, do you sometimes during the day while you're sitting at work, start thinking about, like, daydreaming and thinking about things that are going on outside of work? So yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. Do people at work sometimes piss you off? Yeah. Do you sometimes get frustrated with the state of political affairs in our country? Yeah. Do you find that that the political views expressed on Facebook are sometimes just stupid and the people that disagree with you are ignorant? Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you answered yes to... if you even thought about answering yes to one of these questions, even if you ended up answering no, you may have a problem. And we here at the Don't Panic Radio Show can help.
Okay. There's all those quizzes on Facebook. I've seen ones where you can make your own. We'll make the Don't Panic quiz. No matter what your answer is, the result
it'll
is
be
listen
like,
to our show.
To I like it. And it could be things like, do you sometimes find that when you go to a meeting, the same thing could have been accomplished by just sending an email?
Exactly. Yeah.
Has your boss ever asked you to do something that you considered asinine? But you did it anyway because... let's face it, you don't feel like looking for another job.
See, that's the whole reason. That's the whole reason why I never became self-employed, because everybody's boss is an asshole. I don't want to be that guy.
Just, you know, another couple examples of how these questions are loaded.
Yeah.
Pardon the pun. Have you sometimes failed to keep promises you made to yourself about controlling or cutting down on your drinking? You mean like, oh God, You get me through this, I'll never drink again.
Yes.
Or I'm never going to get this drunk during the week again.
Yeah. I'll never drink tequila on a Tuesday. Because you get real okay, Lord, last night I said some things.
I was angry. We were both angry.
Yeah, okay.
Both said some things.
Let's not play the blame game.
Yeah, that's right. But when you say, God, when you hold me to these kinds of promises, it makes me feel like inferior to you. And, you know, I read your word all the time, and I believe you are speaking to me. And, you know, that's especially that passage about not having any other gods before you or whatever. It just makes me feel a little less like inferior to you. I just, that's all I'm saying.
You know, and if you know me, you really know I didn't mean what I said.
That's right.
How long have we known each other?
What are you talking about?
Oh, God. If you really love me. Never use that with your significant other, by the way.
Some of the most terrifying words ever spoken by the opposite sex. Mine was, I have an idea. Instantly, my back would start to hurt. Because it usually meant me lifting something.
Do you try to avoid family or close friends while you are drinking? See, that's a trick question. It's like, that's how I avoid family and friends.
Exactly. That was like a couple years ago. I was having a kid's party, and I was all calm, cool, and collected, and my buddy was over here, and he's like, there's like 8 million children running around the house. And he looked at me, he's like, you are surprisingly calm for all this. I just held up my drink like...
yeah.
This is how it's done.
Are you having more financial, work, school, and or family problems as a result of your drinking? No, it's the other way around.
Right.
Has your physician ever advised you to cut down on your drinking? Do you eat very little or irregularly during the periods when you are drinking? Do you sometimes have the shakes in the morning and find that it helps to have a little drink, tranquilizer, or medication of some kind? Do you sometimes stay drunk for several days at a time?
I think we both know the answer to that one.
It didn't say have you ever. It said do you sometimes.
Oh, sometimes.
After periods of drinking, do you sometimes see or hear things that aren't there? Have you ever gone to anyone for help about your drinking? Now those, like, generally those would be like... Yeah, those are pretty good indicators, actually. I can't argue with those.
Yeah.
So they kind of snuck those in there.
That's like that, you know, that one little bit of, like, those questions there, that's like this whole test would be a, who's the dude we hate?
Michael Moore?
Those, if, yes, that's exactly. It's like, okay, well, then we're on the same page with that.
Like, no, the other dude we hate. Oh.
That dude we hate, Michael Moore. You, clearly.
All right. Do you ever feel depressed or anxious before, during, or after periods of heavy drinking? The before, during, or after thing, it's like, just stop with, do you ever feel depressed or anxious?
Yeah.
Because before, during, or after pretty much covers the whole gamut.
Yeah.
And then finally... Have any of your blood relatives ever had a problem with alcohol? Again, I hope that we get a bunch of calls saying, you guys, I answered no to every one of those questions. I think you guys might have a problem. Like, we may get that call, and in which case I'll go, all right, well, I've surrounded myself with people who have drinking problems.
That's correct.
That makes logical sense. But the, in general, if you were to sit down and say, let's come up with a set of questions that would cause people to think they have a drinking problem and therefore send them our way, That those are kind of the questions you'd come up with.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to come home. You feel like celebrating. And if you've got somebody waiting who's just as happy about it as you are, the celebration's even better. You only go around once in life. So you take each day with all the gusto you can. The life you live, the food you enjoy, even in the beer you drink. Why settle for less? When you're out of Schlitz, you're out of beer.
It's Steve and Paul on RFI.
And you know, sometimes things just kind of happen serendipitously.
Mm-hmm. Because
we started talking about this weeks ago.
Yeah.
Right? And then I think, well, maybe it's not serendipity. Maybe it's the fact that my wife listens to the show. Because she, the other day at dinner, she's like, hey, have you heard that Radiolab episode where they talk about there's a pill for, like, to treat addiction? I was like, what? No, no, I haven't. But we've been talking about drinking. It's like we've been talking about drinking for 2.5 episodes. I mean, 2.5 seasons. I'll check it out. So I checked it out, and it all made sense.
Yeah.
Suddenly.
I
started connecting dot after dot after dot.
I seriously hedged. You sent me the link, and I seriously hedged on listening to it. I'm like, well, because I don't know how this is going to go, you know.
It's either going to piss me off.
Yeah, and, you know, and then, so I listened to it after my kids went to bed, and it did piss me off, but it wasn't the podcasting that actually pissed me off. It was the subject matter of the podcast that actually pissed me off.
Pretty much this Radio Lab, if you're not familiar with it, it's a podcast / public radio show about technology. And it's like one of those interesting, you know, technology science sort of things that focuses on it, not from the standpoint of technology and science, but the layman.
Yeah.
How is the everyday Joe being affected by science and technology?
Right.
And they had an episode on, is the way that we've been thinking about addiction and addiction treatment, including alcoholism, heroin addiction, cocaine addiction, is the way that we've been thinking about it, on the verge of undergoing what they call a sea change, meaning it's just going to be turned upside down on its head. And so that's the episode we're talking about. If you want to go listen to it, come back. We'll wait. Okay, welcome back. We told you it was a good episode, didn't we?
Mm-hmm. It was very, yeah, it was very informative and very infuriating.
Okay. I keep saying good, and then you keep hedging a little bit. I want to hear your unfettered, unfiltered, and undulating. Where's some other unwords?
Uncola.
I want to hear your take on it. I'm not sure.
No, I absolutely loved what they did.
Okay.
I mean, what made me mad was, okay, I love it when, as a layperson, which is what I am for the most part, when I hit on something, an idea, and then I have it validated by educated individuals.
Mm-hmm.
I have always thought that Alcoholics Anonymous, because I know a number of enough people that I can say I know enough people. Five. I'll say I know five people that have been through Alcoholics Anonymous, and it is such a horrible, ass backwards way of accomplishing. I don't think they want. I think if Alcoholics Anonymous like worked, it'd be done by now. You know, but they want to keep business going. They want to keep getting whatever funding they get. They want to keep their shit together. So they come up with this stuff. And I've never, I mean, I ran into people who went to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I ran into them at bars. So clearly it doesn't work. I know one guy who met his fiance at Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're total drunks. No, I'm not passing judgment. I know people who have told me they have never in their life wanted a drink more desperately than when they walked out of Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. It's not working.
Now, you may be thinking, dear listener, Well, of course, that the people you'd run into AA people at bars because it's not 100%. And the people who go to AA clearly have a drinking problem. So, of course, you'd run into them at a bar, mm-hmm. right? You're not going to church, so you're not running into the thousands that it works for at church. Okay, that may be what our listeners are thinking, but during that episode, if you didn't get a chance to listen to it, they cite statistics. Now, the statistics are very difficult to come by for two reasons. One is it's called Alcoholics Anonymous, mm-hmm. so people aren't really self-reporting whether it's working for them, but somebody was able to do a study that seems to indicate their success rate is somewhere around the single digits.
I used to, somewhere around the single digits, the low single digits. I used to think, back when I was young and naive, I used to think, you know, oh, Alcoholics Anonymous, I get it, that's awesome, because they don't want you to feel bad about yourself, so they're going to keep you anonymous. No! It's to keep their results anonymous.
My personal encounters with Alcoholics Anonymous people and some of the research I've done, I know at least a couple of people who it's worked for, and they swear by it. Mm-hmm. And they're great people, if not a little seemingly brainwashed, maybe. But, mm-hmm. you know, they really do quote the stuff, you know, the mantras of AA.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to have worked for them, right? Great. Wonderful. But I always get the feeling like they're always sort of teetering on the edge.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? One accidental dose of NyQuil and they would just be, they'd be right back where they started.
And I've looked into it. I have, you know, usually the morning after a good bender, I've been like, maybe I should go to a meeting or something. But so I've looked into it.
Of course, your idea, maybe I should go to a meeting, or maybe they just send me an email.
Yeah, maybe I could just, is there a webinar I can look at?
Webinar.
So I did a little research. This has been years, mm-hmm. like a decade probably. And somewhere I read something that said Alcoholics Anonymous 12-step program, in fact, is the only thing that ever works. Like they said, you know, all of these, you know, in-house rehab or these new psychotherapy approaches, blah, blah, blah. The only thing that ever works is Alcoholics Anonymous, because they treat the underlying whatever, and they connect it to you know, higher power, and like, you don't have power over this, so you need the higher power. I mean, if you're not familiar with AA, I know you are. I'm talking to our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the 12-step program, half of the 12 steps have to do with God, and the book, the Alcoholics Anonymous book, basically talks about God on every page.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty much saying, you don't have power over this, let God handle it, right? And so I thought, well, as one who's not necessarily a God believing person, you know, can I get my head around, this is the reason I kind of never went to a meeting, is I was like, could I substitute God for the universe, or
yeah,
something I don't know about.
Like, right.
Clearly I don't have control over it, or I would have been able to fix it myself by now. So there's some other power that is going to need to fix it. And I bought into that. I really did buy into that. I never went to a meeting, but I thought, well, God bless them. They're having success. That's great. Fast forward to this episode of Radiolab,
mm-hmm.
and they... You know, it's not like they're making shit up either.
Right, right.
And they're pretty objective. They give both sides of the coin.
Well, just that one episode, they go into detail how long it took them to put that episode together. So they're not just, you know, throwing it together and putting it out there. You know, they actually put a lot of work into this.
So they're not doing like what we do.
Well, I didn't.
They're doing like what we do for the Halloween episode. That's what they did.
Yes. I didn't want to say it in so many words, but yes.
So this is my take, and I was like, we got to talk about this because I had what I referred to as the Washington D.C. moment.
Yeah.
Which is the wait, Washington D.C. is not in the state of Washington? It's not even close to the state of Washington? They're on two different coasts? Oh, mind blown.
That'll mess you
Everything
up.
I ever thought about Washington, D.C. is a lie. I had that moment on the way to work this morning when I was listening to that, or yesterday morning. Mm-hmm. And I started, I alternatively got pissed off and I got really fucking happy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I went back and forth because one of the things this episode did a great job of is not coming down on one side or the other.
Right.
But basically showing you how the way we think about addiction
mm-hmm.
right now, at least what I got out of it, the way we think about addiction in 2016 and for my whole life is the same way we used to think about autism
mm-hmm.
or bipolar disorder or TB or the plague. I mean, it's like, oh, you got the plague. You must not be devoutly religious enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting the plague is an indication of a character flaw.
Right.
So pray a lot. And, you know, apologize to God for your sins. And you're still going to die, but at least you will have made amends with the Lord, right? And I was like, there's so many analogies. And the AA model, I don't believe they're doing it for money or business or whatever. Because after all, they're not for profit. The people that run the meetings don't make money. They're volunteers. I think that they are so bought into their own bullshit
yeah.
that they truly believe what they're saying. And one of the things that blew me away was like when NPR was like, call in if you have any opinion on this matter. And people are, because what the episode was basically saying is modern medicine is starting to figure out like the receptors in the brain that are responsible for addiction, and they're figuring out ways to treat addiction medically
mm-hmm.
and not just pretending it's a character flaw that you just have to get
yeah,
over.
Yeah, it's guilt-driven, it's my fault. I need to fix who I am. And then you mm-hmm. got guys who like, you know, I never really, well, the one guy was like, you know, I only felt like myself when I was like drunk.
Yeah.
It's like, well, how about you give somebody a pill mm-hmm. that will make them feel like themselves, but not make them crash their car and kill somebody on the way home, or feel like who you are and be able to hold a job, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I you know, getting to the bottom of that would be pretty awesome.
It's come around a lot. It used to be, you remember when like people used to like think you were weird if you took a pill? You know, you were yes. you know, it was hush talk to, you know, it was like, you know, it was very hush hush, you know, your folks didn't talk about it or whatever, or if they did, they whispered about it. And now it's like, you know, it's becoming more acceptable that
I remember when I first, not when I first, but I started taking Prozac in like 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then I should have started taking it in 1993.
Okay.
I got my first prescription for it in 1993. I didn't start taking it until 2002 because of the stigma.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And people are like, and they were saying, this is what really got to me during this radio lab, is they were taking these phone calls and people are going, Well, there's no magic pill that's just going to make you stop drinking. There's no pill. You can't just take a pill to fix all your problems. And I was like, that's exactly what they were saying in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically for a decade, I suffered needlessly.
Yeah.
I could have started taking that shit in 2000 or in 1993. And, how would my life have been different? If only.
If only.
But that's the same thing we're hearing now. Yeah. It's like, oh no, there's no pill. It's like, maybe there is a pill. And what if there is?
Well, there's no one pill. But there are many pills that work.
And you find the right one for you.
Yep. And the thing I've experienced with people who have recovered from alcoholism, or recovered backslid and become were drunk a lot, whatever. The only time this shit ever worked, they were ever like feeling like themselves and not, was when they were on medication.
Mm.
Now, how did that become? Why was that a bad thing? Where did that smear campaign?
I also wonder if it's a uniquely American thing, because we have this like ethic, like even I went up to college.
Got
some book smarts, and that was a stigma. I'd come back home and people would be like, oh, them's college words, you're talking college words now. It's like, I can make a living, I feel like I work hard, but I don't do physical labor, I don't get dirty, I'm not in danger of being injured.
Yeah, well, guess what? You went to college to avoid that shit.
Right.
And the only people that get... Wait, maybe we got something here. So the only people that get pissed off are the people that didn't do that.
Right.
So maybe there's some
sort of... If you can take a pill and feel normal, maybe the people that think that's weird are the ones who refuse to take the pill.
It's like the homophobe is really a homosexual.
Yeah.
A closet homosexual. That's what I think it is.
Yeah. That's a good point. And I want to just react to something you said about the guy who said he only really feels like himself when he's drinking.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of was thinking about that. I can sort of relate to that,
mm-hmm,
a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's more than a pill. I think the pill... See, that guy, I would love to check in with him 5 years from now to see how he's doing,
right?
Because he turned his life around when he started taking medication, and it allowed him to not, be drunk all the time. He could drink socially.
Right.
That's another thing Alcoholics Anonymous does. Right on their website, they're like, well, a lot of us used to think we could control our drinking so that we could still drink socially and have fun and enjoy the taste of wine or beer or whiskey or whatever, but not overdo it. We learned that's not possible. We can't drink at all. I was like, this pill, not only, because when I first started listening, I thought the pill was going to be like, it'll make you not ever drink ever.
Right.
I was like, well, fine. I don't want that pill. But then they started talking about this medication. It doesn't make you not ever drink ever. It makes you able to enjoy a drink without triggering whatever mechanism it is in your head that makes you overdrink.
Right, right.
And so that's what this guy was able to do, except he wasn't able to get drunk. And they talked to a few of the people whose addiction was cocaine, and they weren't able to get the high on cocaine unless they stopped taking the pill.
Right.
Because that's the other thing it does, is like, you can drink as much as you want, and you just like... you lose interest because it's not, it's like drinking shitty beer.
Yeah.
It's like, I could drink three cases and get drunk, but why would I want to do that?
Yeah, right. And that's my problem.
And so this guy's like, I didn't feel like myself. So the key there is some underlying hardwired thing. To your point, his problem isn't drinking. His problem is, why can't he enjoy life and feel like himself when he's sober.
Yeah, that's true.
Treat that. Don't think of it as, okay, yeah, we'll treat your drinking to help you not drink. But we got an even maybe equally as serious problem, if not more serious problem, which is there's something keeping you from being happy without chemical alteration. You know?
And I think that's the majority. I think the majority of people would benefit from medication because they, you know, they have that. We all do. We all have that feeling of, you know, we're not satisfied. We're not happy. We can't be ourselves. And, you know, if we could, we would, but we can't.
So we don't.
Hey, Steve.
Yo.
You want to hear a knock-knock joke?
Yeah.
Two guys ran into a bar, and the third one ducked.
Now I get it.
take six.
All right. Well, do it Indie Radio Hours next. For Paul Schultz, I'm Steve Vinson. Please tell a friend. Thanks for listening. Nothing you just heard was true.
When it's gone,
drink, drink, the glasses clink,
making tinkly music till the dawn is breaking.
Clang, clang, who cares a dang?
What's the difference when you're on a spree? Over the teeth, behind the gums, look out, stomach, here she comes.
I have another drink on me. Gurgle, 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 gurgle. Gurgle, 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 gurgle. Trickle, 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 trickle. Slice of cheese and bite of pickle. Doesn't even cost a nickel now to wash it down. Whoa!
Clink, clink, no more to drink. I had a cellar full, but now it's gone. Drink, drink, the glasses clink. Like the anvil chorus and my head is splitting. A breaky, a busty. Oh, brother. Oh, ow. What do I do now? Pink elephants are running after me. Though that stuff was smooth as silk, from now on I'll stick to milk. Nothing else to drink for me.